will not be used in figuring the weight allowance. If it has the ability to come up off the road, whether or not it's up off the road, but it has the ability to come up, it will not be used in determining your weight allowance for that group of axles. Now what this means is that you're either going to have to weld that axle down in the permanent down position so that it cannot be lifted from the road surface, or you're going to have to remove it. Okay? It doesn't make any sense to have that on there, and you know, the lift axle assembly weighs in the neighborhood of about 2,500 to 2,600 pounds in itself. So it doesn't make any sense to have that on there and carry that extra weight around for no reason.
Representative Davis, continue.
I know something about this issue, but my last final question is, what are some of the other states? What are some of the other states? Is there any states that have lift axles besides Alaska? Are we the only one that has a lift axle?
I'm sure there are other states that have them, although I don't know what states they are right off the top of my head. Perhaps T.J. Thrasher might counsel me on that.
Washington State. Just last month, put in an allowance for the fact the very first time. So it's like we're going back.
How about the other states?
Out of the Pacific Northwest, there is 7 states that you allow.
7 states?
And there's some modifications of them. None of them allow them like Alaska had in full. But some of the mountain states do allow them, particularly on the road.
So with some modifications, there are 7 states that allow them. Perhaps not in the same way or in the same circumstances as Alaska, but they are in effect. And as TJ mentioned, the state of Washington last week introduced a measure to allow them. Right?
Representative Davis?
I did have this one other. You mentioned in your testimony that you felt the lift axles were the primary thing pushing the removal of the lift axles was the weight problem. It wasn't safety. I don't know. I'm not counting you, but I just have heard a lot of people talk about their concern was the safety of it, and some of them were truck operators in Fairbanks. So I've heard that, and you know, I don't have any documentation, but I know that that's something that I've heard. You know, they were concerned, you know, not necessarily owners, but some of the operators.
It is naturally a concern for safety, especially in the driving conditions and the weather conditions that we perform under. People in the industry and drivers that I've known over the years have had a definite reason for not wanting that third axle down there. It is unsafe in a lot of the slippery conditions on that haul road between Fairbanks and Prudhoe Bay, or on the pavement for that matter. Knowing when and how much pressure to put on that lift axle under changing driving conditions is part of the driver's expertise that he depends heavily upon. Safety is an issue. It's always an issue. If there's one life that's lost or one person that's hurt. But it's not a major issue in this case because the people that put these on their trucks, the drivers that put these on their trucks, know how to use them. They've known how to use them for years. And it's not something that they're unfamiliar with, nor something that they can't deal with, given the right set of regulations to stay within. The safety issue I didn't mean to regulate it to, or relegate it to a point of insignificance. Not insignificant, certainly, but it wasn't the major reason that the Department of Transportation had for promulgating these regulations. And it was not an issue as I saw it in any of the informal and formal hearings in which I participated. It was a concern of the people that attended the hearing, some owner operators to be specific.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Do you have anything else, Aaron?
Not at present, no.
Yes. Representative Alberry.
So would you help me with your last name, Aaron?
Fanahan.
If lift axles are a safety problem, it seems to me that it would be reflected in the liability insurance rates that companies have to pay for the vehicle and the taxes. Can you tell me whether or not you know if there is any difference in the insurance premiums that have to be paid for a vehicle that has a lifted axle as opposed to a vehicle that does not have a lifted axle?
I can't say that for sure. I imagine there might be a slight difference insofar as the value of the tractor is concerned, or certainly it would increase the value of a tractor that had a lift axle over one that did not have one, because it is an additional cost item that's added to a truck. Most trucks, when they come from the factory, are not made with a lift axle. You have to buy them separately and then install them at the dealership. But at this point, I don't believe there's any correlation between the increase in insurance rates that we're all suffering with in our industry and the use of lift axle and safety.
Yeah, I don't want to imply that I think there's any connection between the current insurance crisis and the lift axles, but I am trying to find out whether or not, as a standard course of business, insurance companies have asked for higher premiums, not because of the added value that a lift axle represents, but because of a safety problem. Maybe there's a higher...
No, not so. None whatsoever.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else?
No, that's all. Thank you.
All right. I would like to have the people listening in Fairbanks and the committee look at some of the things that have occurred and what the results of public hearings the DOT held. If you look in your pamphlet, right past the first page, it gives us the stats, and I'm going to read these aloud so the listening audience can hear them. There were three public hearings held by DOT having to do with the proposed regulations. In Anchorage, public hearing was held August 28, 1985. 37 persons total testified. 35 testified against adopting the proposed regulations. In Fairbanks, there's a public hearing held August 30th, 1985. 26 persons testifying total. 14 testified against adopting the proposed regulation. In Juneau, public hearing was held September 5th, 1985. 7 persons testified. 4 testified against adopting the proposed regulations. Overall, these numbers averaged 74.2% of the testimony received. That testimony was against the adopting of these regulations. I think that it is public benefit to know these statistics, know that what the results of the public hearings were. However, the regulations did go to the Attorney General and are now in the office of the Lieutenant Governor to be signed and go into effect January 1, 1986. Representative Davis?
Madam Chairman, just a question on these proposed regulations. Did they change any from the proposed to the ones that are about to be adopted? Was there any modifications taken up because of the testimony?
You'll find that on the page right after the long sheet that you have.
The long sheet, in the handwriting is the sections that they added. This was the public testimony received, so the handwriting is the sections that they sent back for redraft.
And
then they're reflected in the final rates over the back.
Listening to Mr. Banahan's testimony, that these were not significant changes. They really didn't change the proposed regulations that much for the benefit of individuals driving other than on the Fairbanks Prudhoe Bay Road.
So the modifications, their changes were just for those along the haul road?
Primarily. I think now that we'll probably go to Fairbanks and see if there's somebody in Fairbanks that wishes to testify. Fairbanks, can you hear me?
This is Fairbanks.
Have you been able to hear the discussion that's been going on in the committee room?
Yes.
Do you have somebody at this time that you would like to have testify or give some comments?
There's several gentlemen here represent various elements in the trucking industry. I believe they're going to have a spokesman.
All right. Would that person like to come forward and state their name and their occupation and proceed with their comments?
My name is Ken Williamson. I'm terminal manager for Men and Transport in Fairbanks.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Williamson.
We all testified, as you mentioned earlier on these hearings, quite a few of us here in Fairbanks, and like you earlier mentioned, everyone seems to be a little opposed to the regulations. I think the main reason is the fact that there's a lot of equipment out there that's set up that will, the operations will be hindered in a safety manner if they have to be run with the less driver weight, which this law would force us to run, and primarily in the tanker business. I also feel very strongly that the law would eventually be circumvented by a lot of people trying to haul more weight by taking a torch and cutting the springs so the axle does not lift. It'll get them by the scale, they can go past the scale and do what they want to do, or slide backwards off a hill or whatever. And I think the industry has pretty much testified that they are really against this proposal, and most of us wish the state would kind of leave it alone.
Anything else, Mr. Williamson?
Basically, that's it.
Yeah.
Yes, Representative Davis?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Williamson. Just a question, I guess, is that it looks like they're quite a ways down the road on this, and not to use that pun, I suppose, but and what happens if they do become implemented? Do you see the, as you said, do you see people circumventing the law? And I mean, we certainly don't want to make a worse situation than we already have. Do you have any, what, do you have any what ifs or suggestions to the committee? If these things do become law,
I definitely feel that there will be people out there that are going to circumvent the law. You have a lot of problems, insurance problems right now. I think this will worsen this issue because of people are going to be forced to try to haul product at a rate which is already too low in many cases. We have a lot of serious problems there on the road right now with safety and, as you well know, insurance. I think this is going to worsen that because people will try to operate when the conditions are such they should not. They will leave that axle down and they will try to pull the hills with it, creating a problem.
Go ahead, Representative Davis.
Mr. Williamson, one of the things that I talked to the chairman about was the insurance issue and the problems that's making for your industry. And if you have any comments to that effect, we'd certainly welcome those now, because the lift axles is certainly an element that's, as you say, if we have a trucking industry that becomes more prone to any accidents, that's certainly going to affect all of you and all of us indirectly. But so if you have any comments on that, we certainly appreciate them.
Yes, I do. The last year when we lost the ATC, we currently have no governing agency that will police the insurance issue or the safety issue. Our company has a tractor in our yard that's totaled, a driver that was seriously injured. The other carrier had no insurance. I have talked to Department of Motor Vehicles, Department of Public Safety, Department of Commerce, the Attorney General's Office, to try to get something straightened out and to at least try to get this company to prove insurance. Because currently, it's against the law to operate a commercial vehicle in the state of Alaska without insurance, but there is absolutely no teeth put in the law whatsoever, and no one monitors this sort of thing.
Well, Mr. Williamson, if I might inject a statement or a question here, then would it be your recommendation, perhaps, that this committee take into consideration some type of legislation that would deep into that law?
Absolutely, Betty. There's something has to be done on this because, we don't want to kill a bunch of kids in the school bus and then say we should have done something. And unfortunately, I would estimate that probably 10% of the carriers north of Fairbanks are currently operating without insurance at this time.
That's a large estimate, and I see the danger. Do you have something more, Representative Davis?
Yes. Mr. Williamson, I'm as you can tell, I'm currently out of town, but I have a member of my staff there, and I would be glad to sit down with you or anyone else and work with the chairman to try to put some teeth into the law. So if you have some comments there, I believe that you could get the copy of the legislation that was passed last year there from Legislative Affairs, and I'll be there for a couple more weeks and be glad to sit down and try to help work something out.
Okay, we have a copy of it here and been looking at it. Also, I have talked to other members of the Department of Commerce in different places, and people are interested and want to do something. I think the main problem is there's apparently no funding for this, and also no directive as to whose responsibility this is after when the ATC was abolished last year.
Mr. Williamson, I think we can get an AG's opinion to find out which agency would or which department would have a responsibility. So I'm not saying that we can solve all the problems, but I think we can do some work on this. And I'll be back sometime tomorrow. So I'd be glad to meet with you later on this week or next week, and when we can get working on this from my angle, I'll be glad to help in any way I can.
That would be very, very good.
Is there anyone else in Fairbanks? Mr. Williamson, I thank you very much for your testimony. If there's no further questions to be asked of you, is there anyone else in Fairbanks that wishes to testify? That word testify is always scary, so I'd rather say, would you like to make any comments? Is there anyone in Valdez that would like to make any comments? Valdez, are you able to hear us? Thank you, Jidge. Would you go ahead and make your comments?
Chairman McGill and members of the committee, I would like to address my comments to the proposed regulations, and to be quite frank with you, I haven't seen the latest draft. However, and what I understand, I would like to address my particular comments at this time to the gross vehicle limitations with regard to the operation of double 40 combinations, particularly out of Valdez, and I would assume that my comments would have some general applicability to operation of double 40s in general. As a little background, I would like to comment that back in 1984, Alaska Freight Lines applied for and was successful in obtaining application and permission to operate double 40s on the Richardson Highway between Valdez and Fairbanks. And since the outset of that, we have proven that it has lent itself in terms of the growth of the traffic which has moved over the docks of the Port of Valdez, to the point that in September of 1984, we received our first pipe shipment ever of Oil Country tubular goods, and we have been very successful since then, subsequent to that, in moving Oil Country tubular goods in competition with other ports of entry in the state. Now, I can trace this back directly to the operation of the double 40s. We have been able to offer our rates on a competitive basis with other modes of transportation and other ports. And without the double 40s, I don't think that Valdez would have achieved the rate of growth that is enjoyed to this point. I point to the fact that in the last few months, from July through early December, we were able to transport well over 10,000 tons of cargo between our two companies, and fully 90% of that cargo was transported on 40-foot combinations. So it is very significant and very important to us to be able to transport our commodities, which are primarily moving through Valdez Oil Country tubular goods, relatively low tariffs and low margins by use of double 40 equipment. It gives us significant economies, and it allows us to be competitive in an era of very competitive marketplace. In addressing particularly the limitations on gross vehicle weight, I am again working in the dark, but it's my understanding that the gross vehicle weight limitations for combinations will be set based on what we call the bridge law, which is a trade-off between wheelbase and a number of axles at 9 axles and 131,500 pounds. And I would wish at this point to pause and let anybody who knows more than I do about this correct me, and then I will resume my comments. Or
is he correct?
No.
Yeah. Just one moment, Mr. Banahan will make a statement.
I'm not sure. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. In the latest copy of the regulations, as I have in my possession, state the doubles will be permitted to operate on a permit basis on the Richardson Highway. The permits as they are presently issued simply state that from the front of the first trailer to the rear of the rear trailer be no more than 90 feet in length. And according to these regulations, special overlength permits may be issued in accordance with an Alaskan statute that's in effect on the route between Fairbanks and Prudhoe Bay. For semi-trailers up to 48 feet in length. But primarily with the route that with which you're concerned, and I know some other people are concerned with, that regulation has really not been changed. From what I understand, the State Department of Transportation will continue to regulate and allow the regulations to give the Department of Division of Weights and Measures the authority to grant permits for doubles moving between Valdez and Fairbanks on a year-round basis.
Thank you for those comments and that clarification. It was my understanding, based on associates' conversations with Division of Weights and Measures, that they were going to limit us to 131,500 pounds gross vehicle weight on the doubles at a 9-axle configuration. This is a recent conversation held with Division of Weights and Measures.
That also, that 8-axle or 9-axle configuration is not true also. They're going to continue to permit the combinations of doubles based on the amount of permanent axles that are used in those combinations. So, for example, if in a regular doubles combination, you would have a 9-axle situation if you had tandems on the rear of each trailer and a 2-axle dolly. If you had a 3-axle group on the rear of each trailer and a tandem dolly, you would have 11 axles. And that, coupled with the bridge formula that you're operating with right now and your length, would determine the amount of weight that you'd be able to haul. That will still be permitted under this change in regulations.
Thank you again for that. I am fairly familiar with the gross vehicle weight regulations. I have a table in front of me, as a matter of fact, and I can comment to the effect that our companies normally use a 12 and 13 axle configuration for hauling cargo out of LDs. And most of our combinations have been permitted between 146 and 148,000 pounds. Now, my comments, and I would like to continue, I'll be very short and brief to the point. If, in fact, the 131,500-pound weight limitation does come about, we will suffer dearly in Valdez. With a 12- or 13-axle combination and a reduction to 9 axles, it would just be completely impossible for us to compete effectively out of Valdez. I think anybody looking at one of those charts can see the difference between, let's say, for instance, a 146,000-pound permitted gross vehicle weight and a 131,500-pound permitted gross vehicle weight. You're looking at roughly a 9% reduction in net payload capability. And this, combined with the way rates are going right now and the commodities that we're hauling, would just completely put Valdez out of the picture as far as competing for this type of traffic. Thank you.
That's quite right. It would put Valdez out of the picture. But under the proposed regulation changes, you will still be permitted to use the bridge formula based on the number of axles you have. Although, remember, they cannot be lift axles. You will have to have them in a permanent position.
My comment now with regard to lift axles is as follows. They haven't been actually voiced or vocalized to this point, but the reason that the Division of Weights and Measures Department of Transportation has a problem with the lift axles is not safety, as has been mentioned before. It is because as soon as the particular vehicle and the number of common with the number of axles under it pulls across the scales and receives a nod from the scale attendant and they proceed down a hill and prepare to go up the next one, that lift axle comes up. And I have made a suggestion in the past, and I would hold by it. First of all, I figure that the 40,000 pounds or the 38,000 pounds per tandem is a completely arbitrary figure. And I don't know how they came about that figure. There was a lot of mishmash that was given out by the DOT, but I don't see that was a justification for the numbers that they came up with. I would suggest that they go to a 40,000-pound allocation per tandem, which would be in line with the 20,000-pound, which is allowed for a dual-wheeled axle under the current regulations. And this would alleviate the dislocations that are going to be caused by the deletion of the lift axle and would put most of the combinations that exist now and the allowances allowed under those combinations on the current charts in parity. And there would be very little change in the status quo. I think the safety issue would be addressed, and I think that the operating concerns of the trucking companies would be addressed in great part. And along with that, another comment, I don't believe that going to 38,000 pounds on a tandem and leaving the at 32 is correct. There violates a certain sense of proportionality, and I think if you're going to raise one to 38,000 pounds, if that's the case, then certainly triples should go to some higher allowance.
Thank you very much, Judge. I would like to, when I get home, and I'm going to get there one of these days, sit down and you and I discuss a few things and get in touch with my office and see if we can also talk to various other people as far as weights and measures are concerned, and perhaps we can do something about this.
Thank you, Chairwoman Cato, and I'd be pleased to do that. Thank you again, Chairwoman Cato and Commission, for the opportunity to testify.
Okay, is there anyone else in Valdez that wishes to testify? We'll go now to the Mat Su. Is there anyone in the Mat Su district that wishes to testify or make comments?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Our participant does not wish to testify at this time.
All right, thank you very much. Do we have anyone here in Anchorage that wishes to make comments? Yes, Representative Penalberry would like to ask a couple of questions.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The first question I think is for the staff. Or do we have a representative from DOT here? Is there a DOT?
I don't believe there is anyone from DOT Hub here.
All right. I wonder if Wendy could tell us whether or not DOT has compiled any statistics concerning the number of accidents involving lift axles. And if Wendy doesn't know if any of the other people who've been following this issue know if we have any empirical evidence that relates accident rates to lift axles.
TJ might be able to help me with this. That was one of the questions that was asked of the department at several of the hearings. And essentially, as far as accident statistics go, the department felt that it was difficult to define what accidents had been as a direct result of lift axles. And so they did have very inconcrete data available on that, because they said that unless the accident had happened and, like Mr. Banahan had said earlier, that he only remembers in the 15 years one that was directly related to lift axles. DOT is saying that a lot of accidents probably are as a result of the lift axles, but yet they can't seem to document that. What they did for the safety aspects, and they had a videotape, and the videotape essentially showed the difficulty
handling. It was a simulated series, and it showed the difficulty and in handling a vehicle on bad driving conditions and how dangerous lift axles were. People who viewed the videotape said that nobody who was a responsible driver would be driving, first of all, anything like was simulated on the videotape. And I don't know, TJ, did you feel that?
Thank you. I wonder if in the course of these hearings that DACPA held, if they considered the comments that have been placed in the back of our book from different people in the industry, whereby suggestions have been made to modify the proposed regulation. Two of the suggestions that I've picked out that seem particularly worthy of consideration is that the regulations only apply in the wintertime, or have only a wintertime ban. And I'd like to hear what some of the people here have to say about that. And the other one is the notion of grandfathering the existing vehicles that have lift axles so that we don't have to force someone to lose an investment that's already been made. And I'd ask Wendy again if she knows whether or not, and I'm not going to put you on this, but I wonder if DACPA has addressed this to the best of your knowledge, because you've been closer to this issue than we have in the interim, and then maybe Mr. Vanahan, who's been following this, can tell us what he knows about.
As far as I know, DACPA has not addressed that issue. As a matter of fact, quite a few of the things that they were contacted over numerous times by House Transportation, and T.J. Thresher had and myself had talked to them and brought up quite a few things and quite a few of the industry's concerns. And again, the answers from DOT every time was that these were the regulations and they were going to adopt them. And even after constant conversations with them over several hours one day, they wouldn't change their mind and wouldn't listen to any more. I mean, even on changing the weights or anything like that, they didn't seem to be responsive to discuss it. And the only comment I'd like to make is, in all the time going through this, we asked for copies of the regulations. We never saw any form of these regulations. Finally, the way we finally got them was to call the commissioner's office 3 days before this committee meeting and have Susan Flashower give us a set of everything that had happened all the way through. House Transportation hadn't seen one single sheet of paper from DOT.
Well, doesn't that violate the Administrative Procedures Act, whereby the legislature has to be given notice of so many days prior to not only the regulation the first time it's issued and it's proposed, but for the changes that occur? I think maybe there's something to look at there. I happen to have a real open mind on this issue. I'm learning about it as we go, but I'm a little concerned that we haven't yet heard who wants to change the situation. If somebody wants to change the status quo, the Department of Transportation is proposing to change the situation, but who is urging them on? They don't have any concrete, at least as far as we can tell, any concrete statistics to say that it is a safety problem, though they may suspect it is, and they may be right, I don't know. But absent any empirical data, who is pushing for the changes? I wonder if you can tell me that.
Representative Pinio, very... The trucking industry and House Transportation that has tried to answer that question over the last several months. Representative Cato telephoned. Quite a few of the backup information in the back of the packet states that telegrams were received. A lot of requests were put into DOT for two things. Number one, to delay and the hearings, delay any decisions made on the hearings until further study and investigation could be done. Number two, to hold hearings in sites like Valdez and a lot of other communities that were going to be dramatically impacted by these. For some reason, DOT didn't grant either one of those requests, went straight ahead, and the regulations before any time had passed are in the Lieutenant Governor's office. And TJ, I don't have any idea why. Reid, do you?
It's my understanding that the reason that the Department of Transportation wanted to make these changes was primarily one-fold, and that was that their bridge section had determined that there was an amount of damage being done to the bridges on the roads between Prudhoe Bay and on the paved roads as well, by the trucking companies and by those drivers that were overloading two axles instead of having that lift axle down in a down position. After they went over the scales, they would pull that axle up and then overload the two remaining axles on the highway, and that the resultant damage to the bridges and roads was of a severe nature. Now, we in the association questioned them to provide data, some sort of data, that would support that, and to also provide some sort of information as to the amount of deterioration that had occurred at various bridges, but they always gave us the general answer that their engineering department couldn't do that because they hadn't had time to make a complete study. And they also felt that because of this abuse of the lift axle by the industry, or not because of it, but in light of it, they were unable to provide or unable to get in a dwindling state revenue. They were unable to provide enforcement of the regulations on a statewide basis. They couldn't enforce the lift axle regs, so they went ahead and changed them. And they couldn't prove where damage to the highways really existed, but they had a suspicion that some of the bridges were being damaged because some drivers were evidently abusing the lift axle privilege.
Madam Chairman, I have a question, but did we allow people that were in Anchorage to testify?
No, I wanted to get to them as soon as this.
I had a question, but I'll hold my question. Thank you.
All right. Representative Penalberry, did you have another? We are going to get the people in Anchorage. Don't try to leave us. We do want to hear your comments also. As soon as we get through with this question, we'll have you come out.
Well, I guess my question is probably more of a comment in that I think we can all agree that if you've got a truck that goes over the scale with its lift axle down and raises it, there's cheating going on there, and it seems like the real answer is enforcement. And maybe it means that the dot foot maintenance people along the haul road should be given some limited enforcement authority for that purpose. But it doesn't seem like it's the kind of thing that you restructure the whole darn industry for. But I'm learning as we go here, so I'd like to hear what these other people have to say.
Sure. Yes. We're now coming to Anchorage. I'm sorry that we were so long. But anyone that wishes to testify, will you please come forward? Give your name and who you represent.
Yeah, my name is Joe Rule, and I drive for Sealand Freight Services, and I'm an owner, operator, and line driver. And I feel that there's at least a conflict of interest when Commissioner Knapp sits on the board of directors, and he's commissioner of the DOT. Am I right there, Betty?
If you're referring to the board of directors of the railroad, yes.
Yeah,
that's
the railroad. The commissioner of the Department of Transportation sits on there, and I think whether this is the direction this came from, especially in the rail belt areas, the state of Alaska on one hand is further restricting the gross payload we can haul with a truck. Through predatory pricing, they're already putting us out of business with the railroad from Anchorage to Fairbanks. And now Commissioner Knapp, whether he's done anything or not, he's in a very viable position to do that. They can take a 70,000-pound load of steel, put it on a flatbed, a two-axle flatbed, stick it on that railroad and haul it to Fairbanks. They don't cross any scales at all. You can't get them to take jump scales down there. And they have a short distance. They're right in the business section of town in Fairbanks. There's no scales to cross in all probability. And if so, they could still split the load and very well afford to do that. We're getting strangled. Not only by the fact we can't haul the weight at 42,000 pounds, now the state wants to come in and take more gross vehicle weight away from us, and I feel that there's any restrictions are out of line. I don't think we're being dealt with fairly right now, and I think it's going in the wrong direction.
Thank you, Mr. Rule. There is a question. Representative Schultz?
Yeah, just a question maybe to anyone. Has anyone ever testified in favor of these things?
I testified against. I opposed the legislation we're discussing right now. And I think it was late August or early September, we had a meeting on International Airport Road. I don't know whatever became all of this, but it was probably a 80 to 20 margin, I'd say, of people opposing the lift axle. I don't know. Is that the one that you have?
Your margin is even higher than that. That public hearing was held in August, and there were 37 people testifying, 35 testing against adopting these
regulations. I wasn't sure if that was the same one day or not. But.
Okay. Well, my question is, did anyone testify in favor of adopting these regulations? Does anyone come forward? That the information wasn't down here. Did anyone come forward and just said that there's 35 people to testify against? Did two people testify in favor, or just 35 people testified out of 37?
Two people in that meeting testified in favor.
Representative Canalberry?
I'm trying to figure out if the people testified for the regulations, are they from trucking industry?
I know the two people that testified at that meeting, and both of those people were in a kind of an exclusive market there. Both of those people don't haul very much bulk commodity and heavy load. Both of those particular individuals were in the LTL, less than a load related, and it didn't matter to them anyway. They just didn't want the extra cost of keeping up lift axles, so they never had to be $32,000. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Continue, Representative Canalberry.
I'm really glad we've got the driver here to talk, and we'll hear from others, but do you feel that your life is at stake when you're driving with the lift axle down? Do you think there's an increased safety problem? Do you represent a hazard to my life, to your life, to anyone?
No, sir. I don't really feel that's the case, because the way it is right now, I have a control valve inside my cab, and it's almost as automatic as braking. If the front end's not steering properly, that's the first thing that gets hit and lifted up. And as Mr. Banahan pointed out earlier, most of the time, almost 100% of the time, it's in icy conditions or in the wintertime, you know, and the road is frozen, and there's not going to be any damage occurring to the road.
If I may, Madam Chairman, the other question I have, I guess, is if you would help me, the three of you are all senior to me in your experience. We've got something called the Administrative Regulatory Review Committee in the legislature, and I don't think it does. What's it for? Shouldn't they be dealing with this?
It's there to investigate proposed regulations and to see whether or not to go back over regs that are in place. This committee has just come into its own this last year. Prior to that time, it was chaired by an individual who didn't do a great deal on it. I don't think they've gotten to this issue as yet. However, I think that your suggestion that we give this to them for them to start raising some cane of some kind, or at least so that we get some clear explanations, would be an excellent one.
Representative Schultz. Comment. Year before last, when the ballot issue were before the people asking to give the legislature the opportunity to write the regulations on the bills prior to the passage of them, was defeated. The people said, leave it to the departments to write regulations, keep the legislature out of it. Had we had the opportunity and had that passed, we would be sitting in a position now where you wouldn't be faced with this kind of crap.
As a comment to respond to my friend from Stoke, I voted against giving the legislature that authority, because at that time I thought the legislature was in such a disarray that didn't want to give you guys any more authority. But, you know, I do have a bill that's being drafted, and it just occurs to me that it'll be introduced this session. It will require the departments to provide the justification for any regulations they propose. And clearly here we haven't seen justification. So anybody who's listening out there, I hope you'll lend some support to that bill.
That's my whole question is, if everyone was, if the testimony is unanimous on this, and they have conducted public hearings, and the public sentiment is not to adopt these regulations, then I, for the life of me, cannot figure out why DOT hasn't simply backed off on it.
If I might make an expression to answer you, Representative Sheldon, I personally called from outside when I was out there, called the commissioner, told him the stats that I knew, and said that 74.2% of the testimony was against the adoption of the regulations from them that will be satisfactory to us. Representative Davis?
You know, I'd like to find out the DOT's reason why they weren't here. But you mentioned in your testimony that you felt that the commission had a conflict of interest in dealing with that, and I can see why you would think that. He definitely does it on the board of the railroad. I guess my question is, I've never done anything more than write co-pilot in one of those 18-wheelers, but I guess my question is, when you lift the axle up, and that puts more weight on the wheels that are on the ground. So what happens? What kind of weight are we talking about? It's 38,000 pounds, and then when the lift axle goes up, then how much more weight goes on the road? And that's my first question.
Well, basically, what you're doing is you're shifting the weight. There's a matter of leverage here. It's not necessarily the skidding of the axle. It's preventing you to turn. That, in addition with the lessening of weight as the axle goes down, just if you can just picture leverage working on the front end, with that axle is ahead of the driver's. When you push it down, consequently the front end of the truck gets lighter, and that definitely loses traction. There's several people around now that have steering lift axles, and they help, you know. But it's never been my I've never seen a problem with getting that axle up. Usually, you know it long before you're in that kind of a situation. It'll slip. You'll feel it slip a little bit on the corner, and if you have to pick them up, you can pick them up. But there's one other point that it's going to be hard to work around taking this lift axle off. A lot of trucks aren't even equipped with a sliding fifth wheel, and when you can put 42,000 pounds on those drivers, and you're a little bit heavy on the drivers, you can decrease just a little bit of the weight on that lift axle, and it shifts weight to the front end of the truck, providing you don't go over the 11,000 or 10,000 pounds, whatever the tire size. But what it does basically is it gives you a little bit of allowable weight to play with, so you can load maybe a little bit heavier, a little bit light on those drivers, and you have a little. It's too cost prohibitive to reload the load 15 times to get it just perfect. And that axle, basically what it does is it allows you to even everything out. 5 pounds of air will put another 500 pounds, or take another 500 pounds off of the steering axle and add it onto the drivers, and it gives you a little something to play with. When you start talking about 38,000 pounds, that load's going to have to be perfect, or the fifth wheel's going to have to be slipped. And if you don't have a sliding fifth wheel, you're going to have to, as a result, reload. Or you're not going to be able to. It just inhibits it just a little bit more on how we can. My main concern is competing with the railroad. We all have to compete with each other, too. There's no lack of competition in the trucking industry here, but it makes it much, much harder. It's just added costs that are incurred, and it's going to be passed on to the public, and a lot more so to the outlying areas that aren't served by the railroad.
Is that true?
Representative Davis, go ahead.
Yes, I appreciate your testimony. Another, I guess, question I have is do these bridges have some kind of a set, like national standard? They can only have so much weight for maybe that's an unfair question to you, and we should have DOT here. But do they have some load limits which they, you know, according to the engineer, if you have 10,000 more pounds on the wheels or whatever, then that, according to their formulas, that causes X number of damage or X damage to those bridges.
There is a bridge formula in place.
I'm not quite sure about nationally, but there is a bridge formula. I've seen the bridge formula for this state, and I'm not sure how it stacks up with the other states, but I'm quite sure that there's a bridge that doesn't meet the specifications, it wouldn't be on a federal highway. It'd probably be marked, you know. But for most bridges, I'm sure there.
I guess my question is the our
some of our bridges not up to the, when they were built, some of our bridges were obviously built 20, 30 years ago, so are some of our bridges not built to the weights that perhaps are carried? And is that, could that be some of the motivating factors? I mean, your testimony is real good, and I can understand this. I can understand sort of the fluid motion that, that a lift axle would give to a trucker that's going down the highway, and, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm just curious if there's, you know, you have engineers out here sitting here, if you do this, then this is going to happen, and all that sort of thing.
I don't think that there's any bridge in this state on a main travel artery that, that wouldn't be able to support the difference in 4,000 pounds on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't
that
think
I,
so
that I know of. I was... Mr. was Mr. Hiller that brought up the 40,000 pounds. I support that theory. I think that's a good theory. It seems like no matter how strong opposition we get to get rid of this, it's still going to be here. And if it is going to be here, I support the 40,000 pound theory. He answers a lot of your questions and takes care of a lot of it. Like I said, the only thing that, that we're not going to have is the availability to shift the load with the axle. And not just on the drivers, but on a lift axle on a trailer, you can do the same thing with your driver. You put more weight on the lift axle on the trailer, and consequently it takes weight off of your drivers. It's just, it's simple leverage. And that's a, it's a big plus for us, and it saves money, and it saves time. And that's about all I have.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Rule. Do we have anyone else, Mankins, that we should testify? By the way, tell your dad hello.
He'll be here tomorrow to see you.
Okay.
Everybody. You just push this when you want to talk.
Yeah. Yes, please do. Give your name and who you represent.
My name is Dennis Jones, and I represent myself. I'm an owner-operator. I think one of the things on the safety that people are missing the point of under the new regulations, if you do away with a lift axle on the truck and you have three fixed axles on the trailer, you can put more weight on the trailer, reduce your traction on the truck, and that's where the safety part of it comes in. And especially with doubles, you have two 40-foot or 45-foot trailers or whatever, the combination where you have the heavier load on there and less weight on your drivers, and that does make for an unsafe situation. Do you understand what I mean?
No, what do you mean on your drivers? Not, you mean
on the drivers, I mean the driving axles of the truck. Currently, with a three-axle group on the drivers with the lift axle, you can carry 42,000 pounds. If you do away with that, you have 38,000 pounds on there, and you still have the 42,000 pounds behind you, or twice that with two loads. You're reducing your traction of the tractor, and it makes it harder to pull and drive and handle on the road. That's one thing that, you know, under the current set of facts, we don't have that. We have more weight on the drivers. The second thing is on the 40,000 pound weight limit that they're not going to allow us, they say it's 38,000. They're saying, well, if you get rid of your lift axle and we bring it up to 38,000, that makes it almost equal to what you're carrying now because of the weight of the lift axle. My lift axle and most of them don't weigh 4,000 pounds. I'm allowed to carry 42,000 now on with the lift axle. You take 1,200 or 1,300 pounds away and I can only carry 38,000. The difference isn't there that the DOT is saying is there. And that it's just a fact that most people don't understand.
Representative Davis? Do you want to continue?
Well, I just show my ignorance on this issue. But what,
you're not.
What,
we're all trying to get to the basis of things we need to know.
What is the 38,000? I mean, where is there, use this word, breaking point, but between 38,000 and 42? What's the, why does 38,000 work out to be a magic figure? And why is it when 42,000, when it's 38,000 pounds, and you lift the axle up, then it becomes 42,000 on those tires? Is that significantly increase the damage to the road, or that's what the engineers in the Department of Transportation are saying, or is this some established criteria nationwide that they have approximately 38,000 per axle? Maybe I'm even starting to learn what I'm talking about here, but do you understand what I'm saying?
The rest of the nation I don't know about, but Alaska, under the current rules with a two-axle driver group or two axles on the ground, you're allowed 34,000 pounds. Three axles, it's 42,000. So there's an 8,000 pound difference there between two and three. But under the new regulation proposal, they're saying for two axles they'll allow you 38, where right now you only have 34,000 for a two axle group. But under the current regulations with three axles, you're allowed 42,000.
That's not per axle?
No, that's for the group. And that's, the industry's been asking and supporting a 40,000 pound limit for two axles. And the new regulations say they will give you 38.
Might I intervene here for just a minute? In other words, the difference of 2,000 pounds, in your estimation, really isn't all that important. It doesn't make that much difference. And 38,000 pounds is an arbitrary figure. Am I correct in thinking that?
Right, that's the way I feel, and I believe a lot of people feel, is that they just reached out and pulled this figure out of the sky, but because it doesn't make that much difference with just 2,000 pounds. And under the way it is now with the company that I work for and the equipment that they have that they've invested millions and millions of dollars in, under the 38,000 pound load limit for two axles, we won't be able to haul most of our loads. It's just too much weight for those because of the equipment. Well, that's a misconception, too. You see an 18-wheeler going down the road, it's got 36 or 38 wheels on the ground.
Minister, I'd like to have a draw for me, because I'm not doing it, what the different variations are, what we've got now, what DOT is proposing in the different configurations. Could you do that? Or maybe
Harry could.
I was going to put the different weights that are allowed under each configuration.
To those in the audience that are in Valdez and Fairbanks and Matsu, what we're doing at the present time is attempting to draw a configuration so that we can, a little bit more to us who are not actual or laymen and not actually involved in this, can understand a little more readily what we mean by actual load.
That's why you're a good committee over there.
I'm dumb, I gotta ask, draw me pictures.
Representative Cato, this is Maxine, the moderator in Fairbanks.
Yes, Maxine.
Valdez has called and asked permission to disconnect from the teleconference since the participant went home. Perhaps Matsu might want to do the same thing, and since there seems to be a little break, maybe this would be a good time to pause and let them make the interrupting tone that you will hear.
All right, thank you a lot. I think that would be an excellent idea. We'll just pause while and keep the mic shut off so we don't hear, that tone doesn't bother us.
One more, Harry. You have the
current. Oh, okay.
Matt, Sue, she just turned her set off. What do you wish to say? This is Maxine.
We can hear her. We're trying to make it really cool.
That's just fine, Matt, Sue. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay, under this situation.
Could you grab a mic, Harry, and speak into it?
Anchorage, are you on?
Okay, under these scenarios, you have two current regulatory situations and the one that's proposed. In the top situation there, there's 11,000, these are groups of axles, there's a steering axle here. These are the three drive axles on a truck. And the rear set is the group of three axles. This is a typical horse load rig, typical highway rig in Alaska. There's a group of three axles on the rear of the trailer. Under that scenario, you can see that for those groups, and the X, of course, in that one is the lift axle, as it's currently employed. Under that scenario, you'd be allowed 11,000 on your steering axle. Then you go up over the scale and you weigh that second group. You're allowed 42,000 on that, 42 on your rear. Combined total weight there of 95,000 pounds. All right, the second group is a good. Could be termed a normal pavement highway type group, where you have a three-axle truck without the lift axle. And currently, if you have that scenario, you're allowed 11,000 on the steering, 34 on the group of two axles, drive axles on the truck, and then 42 as previously noted on the rear of the trailer.
Now, let me ask you a question on the lift axle. When that lift axle is down, is that equivalent?
That's when it's down. 42,000.
Okay, when it's up, what is it?
When it's up, it becomes 34. In other words, any axle that's not touching the ground is not counted as
allowable. But it becomes, you shift the weight, obviously, so.
Okay, now I'll get to that. But this is a typical legal load, okay, or what is allowed under the present regulations. Now, you can see, if you're allowed 42,000 on a group of three axles, and you have 42,000 on a group of three axles, and you lift, take this axle and move it up, then all of a sudden you have 42,000 pounds on two axles instead of three.
But you're not supposed to do that.
But that's not supposed to be done, no.
But I guess I don't understand that because you got 42 back here already.
Those axles in the back do not lift.
Okay, well, there's three, that's right.
Okay, they're just a group of three axles. Okay, anytime you bring that lift axle down to the wheel, you're creating a group of three. When you lift it, then you're creating a group of two. But you still have the same load, weight, bearing down now on two axles instead of three, so the weight is concentrated.
Can you see the disparity there between the 34
under
the, and 38?
Under these conditions here, this is what the state is proposing in their new regulation. They're proposing to go 11,000 on the steering, 38,000 on a set of two, and 42 on a group of three. And this is an 81,000 pound combination, right? 91,000 pound combination. Now, the real reason we need 40,000 pounds on a set of dual axles is because when we take this lift axle off, we are eliminating approximately 2,500 pounds of weight. The mechanism weighs that much. So that gives us an increased payload of 2,500 pounds. But the decrease from 42,000 allowable on group of three down to 38,000 on a group of three is 4,000 pounds. Take away the 2,500 of the weight of the lift axle assembly, and you're still left with 1,500 pounds or 2,000 pounds somewhere in that neighborhood that you're going to lose in overall gross weight for your payload. If we had 40,000 pounds, we wouldn't lose that 1,500 or 2,000 pounds. We'd be able to haul the same payload that we've hauled before, even though we have a reduction from 42,000 to 40,000 pounds. And I think that's what I'm agreeing, what Dennis was alluding to when he was talking to you. Is that right?
Well, if it would be 40, though, you would have, basically, you would have this. That means your load would be 6,000 pounds more, right? Or if you had only two axles here, you'd have 6,000 pounds more on the road.
Yes, but what we haven't put up here, but we need to take into consideration, is the weight of the units. Okay, the empty weight of the trailer and the weight of the tractor as a standalone.
Right, so in other words, it wouldn't be 6,000, it would be around 4,000 pounds, or 3,500 pounds.
Under these proposed regulations, if they take away the lift axle and give us an additional 4,000 pounds on a set of two axles, which they're proposing, they will in effect cut our payload 2,000 pounds. Because even though they're taking away the use of the lift axle, we're losing the weight because it's going to come off the truck. The driver's not going to keep it on there. It's an additional weight that they're going to haul around to get our payload instead. So then the weight of the truck is going to be lightened once the lift axle comes off, so then your payload can increase. But if they give us 40,000 on these two axles, if we take the lift axle off, the payload will remain virtually the same.
They came up with an arbitrary figure and said 38,000 was enough because you'd be removing your lift axles. Well, the difference isn't that much with the lift axles coming off. No, you're not gaining that much.
Most of the figures that they came up with were arbitrary. We never saw any engineering reports or any engineering studies that had anything to do with the condition of the roads and the bridges that were in any way, shape, or form related to the numbers they chose.
Thank you very much, Mr. Banahan. Dennis, do you have further comments? Does anyone have any further questions? I want to thank you both, you and Mr. Rowe, for being here today. And I think we have a lot more insight in the committee because of the testimony that has been given from Fairbanks, Valdez, and Anchorage, and also the presence of DJ Thrasher and Harry Banahan, I think it's made it a lot more. And I also agree with basic picture drawing. Sometimes we can get a better idea if we can put it out into pictures. Mike's just going to put some wheels on those trucks right now. Do we have any further testimony? If not, then we'll disconnect the teleconference and go into a work session and just discuss some of the things we've been talking about on teleconference.
This is Fairbanks. We have one more person who'd care to speak.
All right. We would very much enjoy that.
Chairman Gale, my name is Howard Thies. I work for Kodiak Oklahoma. I'm the terminal manager here in Fairbanks.
Yes.
In relation to some of the comments from Mr. Knapp, I was at a meeting with him probably about a month or so ago, and I directly asked him, why did he not go to the industry and let us just give him some answers and solutions? And he said, well, I did, and you didn't give me any. Well, it's obvious that we had 74% against this regulation. We gave him some answers, but I think it was cut and dry. He walked in the door when this all started and did what he wanted to do. And he told me that it was odd that we were going to do it and it was going to happen. And I think there's something that we can, as the industry, can give him some light if he just listened to us or somebody would.
Thank you very much for that comment. I can assure you it'll be duly recorded.
Another thing, Ms. Cato, we mentioned that these regulations they give us, but I think a lot of people aren't taking consideration. Probably 75 to 80% of the industry has got about a 60-foot bridge law. When he told us he was going to give us 38,000, 38,000, and 12,000 on the front, they haven't taken consideration this bridge law. If this does happen, we're really going to be eliminated down to like 3,500 less than that, because the bridge law will supersede any axle weight law, and that's another thing I think needs to be taken into consideration.
I think probably one thing we need to do as far as the committee is get a copy of the bridge formula and understand it so that we, the members of the committee, can understand it a little more readily.
One other thing too, Mr. Bannon, I'm not throwing weight at him, but when he mentioned that we were going to be able to gain 42,000 in the winter in Fairbanks, that's true, but in reverse that, we have to take it off our trailer to put it on our drivers, so we're really not gaining anything at all. We're helping ourselves as far as the safety factor is traction, but when you come right down to it, we're still right back where we're at. It's less weight than we could have at the beginning.
Correct.
Okay, I just want to clarify that and make sure that everyone understood that.
All right. Representative Pinalberry would like to make a comment.
I just want to say thank you to Mr. Thies for his testimony. He might remember me from the days when we worked at the Weaver Brothers together, and it's good to hear from you, Howard.
Thank you, Mark.
Representative Davis?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Thies, for coming out today. Just a question, if I could, on the bridge law. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not sure. Perhaps there's other people that could be illuminated by you explaining that to us in greater detail.
Well, basically what there is, there's a federal law that takes effect, and they use a formula, and I don't have it here with me, but they use the figure 500, and they divide the length and the width and so many axles. And what happens is that comes out with a weight distribution, or say an overweight gross allowance, which they're going to let you have. So what it says is if you can meet that length, say 65 feet, is I think the magic number for this new regulation they're putting in, that means you can have 12,000 and 38 and 38. But if you meet a rate of, say, a length of 60 feet, and they're going to cut your gross weight, which could be 88, it's going to go down to 85,000. To make that law, you got to take it off either the front or the back, one or the other.
Well, I guess that's my that was a question I had earlier, and it's not these regulations are, I guess my question was is earlier, and maybe you sort of brought it up again, is there some directives that Department of Transportation are following in order to, they're obviously not listening to the public testimony, so is there some kind of directives that some kind of, like you said, this formula, is this something cast that they can't go over that without violating some kind of federal law? Is that what you're saying?
I asked Commissioner Knapp that last time I had a meeting with him. He told me that they called Juneau, or he would get back to me. One of the gentlemen called me from Juneau, and I asked him that question. They said, well, yeah, we cannot supersede a federal law. And I said, well, you did on the front because you gave us 550. How come on the back? is where we can't do that. So he said, well, there's a federal law and they cannot supersede it or change it.
Rob, answer.
Mr. Thies, we certainly have got, you people have too, but we certainly have had less than full cooperation, and I'm sure that that Madam Chairman has expressed that. I intend to talk to the Commissioner myself and see if we can't get a little bit, we can have a little bit more cooperation between people here. But thank you for bringing this to our attention, and I don't know. It sounds like we need to do some work here. Thank you.
I have another question, Chairman, too. Is this a law in regulation now? Is it something that's going to happen? Has it been signed, or is it something we can still put a squash to it?
Howard, the regulations have passed through the Attorney General's office, been modified to a certain extent, but not substantially, and are now in the Lieutenant Governor's office to be signed to go into effect January 1, 1986.
So can we stop before then, or what can we happen?
I'm not sure they can be stopped before then. Perhaps legislatively that we can modify those regulations.
Okay, thank you for that answer.
The department can easily.
Until they're implemented, they're not law. And
right.
So it's kind of like it's not over till it's over, I guess.
Right.
So I intend to talk to the commissioner about this, and I'm sure that. They'll be here tomorrow, is that correct, Madam Chairman? Someone from the department?
Not that I know of.
Alaska Railroad will be here tomorrow.
Alaska Railroad will be here. Uh-huh.
Well, it's not over yet, Howard, but so I'll be talking to them. I'm sure the chairman, Madam Chairman, will be too. But thank you for coming today.
One more question, Chairman Anka. Is it possible for the committee to write a letter to the governor and say, can we hold off on this then so we can get some more input? Is that something that can be happened?
If you wait just a moment, we're going to have a formal motion to that effect, Howard. Representative Finalberry, are you still writing your motion?
Yes.
We'll take just a jiffy until he finishes that.
Ask if they want to stay in on delivery.
Would you like to wait and listen to the motion?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we'll keep you online then. All right, Representative Finalberry.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that, on behalf of the committee, you write a letter to the governor stating that inasmuch as there has been no evidence to support the safety claim against the lift axles, and inasmuch as the Department of Transportation has offered no rationale to justify the proposed regulations, and inasmuch that the Department of Transportation has not responded to any of the suggestions for modification and compromise that have come out of the public hearings they held on these regulations, that inasmuch as there may be a conflict of interest between the commissioner's position as a director of the Railroad Corporation and in his role as regulator of the highway system, that the members of this committee find the department's action to be arbitrary and capricious in this, so far as these regulations are concerned, and we ask the governor to take steps to nullify the proposed regulations.
Wendy, did you get that?
Yes, I did.
All right. Is there a second to that motion?
Comment. Objection for...
Objection for the purpose of discussion.
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of a lengthy statement that you made there. Well, it's kind of a lengthy statement. I don't know whether I got all of it or not. I think, possibly, that I would rather just see a letter drafted supporting the not adopting those regulations at this point in time without going in and carrying the Department of Transportation a new one at this point. You know...
I'd defer to the friendly amendment.
Right, but and I think that maybe we could. You have a comment? Go ahead, Mike. You have.
I can't say any better than Representative Schultz, but I guess my comment would be: I don't think we want scorched earth on this. We want some cooperation, I think the although it's well written and it speaks to the issue well, I think. We want these people to cooperate with us. We don't want them to go to the mat, you know. So I would like to have a letter to the commissioner which sort of follows that vein. And if you can kind of put it in those terms, I'd be glad to second the motion.
Representative Mulberry?
Yeah. Okay, I'd like to withdraw the motion and ask either Representative Schultz or Davis to make their own motion.
All right, the motion has been withdrawn. Representative Schultz, would you like to make a motion?
I don't think we're done. Pardon?
Yeah. Yep.
Representative Schultz?
I don't have anything written down. I would just like to make a motion that we write a letter and have
staff
draft it up and circulate it around and we sign on as a committee members, you know, supporting this, you know, them not adopting these regulations at this point in time, and that and maybe go on and in the letter include something to the effect. I just like to make a motion that we send a letter to the governor.
All right. Representative Schultz has moved that we send a letter to the governor discussing, if I may add a couple of words, discussing the regulation proposed by DOT having to do with the trucking industry.
Right. Asking them not to adopt the regulation.
And asking the governor not to, or just stop the adopting of the regulations.
Right.
Is there a second to that motion?
Yes,
motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion?
I'll speak in favor of the motion, but why don't we let our chairwoman come up with the language, but the basic thrust of the language, which would be something to the effect that man with the golden pen came up with. The thrust is that they haven't... they haven't certainly listened to the testimony, and they haven't that something to that effect. But use the language, work it up, and then send it off.
If I may.
Yes, Representative Schultz.
Okay. Yes, and that's what I would like to have. You know, since we're discussing now what we would like to have in the letter, and that's one of the things that Representative Mulberry brought up, that we should point out the fact that the department has not listened to the testimony, and we should clearly point that out in the letter. That's one of the things that should be included in it.
All right. Shall we take a vote on the motion then, and then I'd like to make a statement?
I'd ask for unanimous consent.
Is there unanimous consent to this motion? Hearing no objection, so carried. The comment that I would like to make was that Representative Schultz suggested that we send around to the members of the committee. I would like to say, find out if we could do this by telephone rather than trying to mail back and forth. Otherwise, we will not get it in there in time.
Madam Chairman, why don't you just write it?
I'd like the discretion to write the letter, and I'm sure that we could write it in such a manner that DOT can't get any madder at us than they are.
Well, we've got a couple weeks here before the implementation of the regulation, so if we... I just say, you know, you basically know what we want. You have the letter, just do it.
Right. Wendy will draft that. Perhaps she can have it ready for us tomorrow and read it to us. Do you think that would be too much to ask of you, Wendy?
I'll do one time.
All right. Real fine. Again, thank you, Fairbanks, for being with us. Thank those for Anchorage for being with us. Matt Sue and Valdez. Matt Sue, I think, is still on. Thank you for being with us. Valdez, I think, is signed off. That will end the teleconference portion of this meeting.
Madam Chairman, this is Fairbanks.
Yes, go ahead.
I believe we have one more person who cared to make a comment.
All right.
We'll
take the time.
Fairbanks. We just want to make sure that's going to the lieutenant governor, not the governor, correct?
No, this letter will go to the governor who has the possibility, has the capability of stopping the regulations. The lieutenant governor doesn't have that type of power. All he can do is just file the regulations.
But he's both the lieutenant and the governor.
The letter will go to the governor.
Who's the sign of regulation, the lieutenant or the governor?
I didn't get your question.
Who is supposed to sign this regulation? The lieutenant or the
governor? The lieutenant governor, but once they pass the AG's office and everything, it's merely a matter of signing and putting him on file. It isn't a matter of any discretion on his part, because I've already asked him.
Okay, thank you.
Was there someone else in Fairbanks who wanted to testify? Or was that just a comment of what we made?
I think that was the last comment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for being with us. Hopefully during the session you'll hook up on our teleconferences too, and we'll be able to get a lot more transportation issues before the public.
Keep on
track. We're off the teleconference. I am, as I said prior to that time, it said on the air that I'm a little upset with DOT on this situation, and hopefully things will be able to ease off, and maybe we can stop those regulations, get more study done on them on the part of DOT, to where they come up with substantial evidence if they want to put regs like that into it.
I still can't understand. I don't think in all of our dealings with the DOT, with Matt and Freetag and Simpson, who were the three principals in this whole thing, during that whole scenario, did they ever come up with one concrete, valid, tested fact that what shape the actual bridges were in?
No, I haven't seen any evidence of that.
You know, bridges have a lifespan. And
right.
These bridges that they're going to have to replace are the result of natural attrition.
I think I can agree with you on that, Harry. One thing that might be kind of interesting, and it's merely a comment and a comparison, and I'm not talking about the Dalton or anything like that, but as you know, we don't have any regulations on campers at all. And I understand the damage they do to the road is much more than a loaded truck. And yet the department is not taking that into consideration whatsoever.
That could be true. I'm not sure about campers myself.
Depends on what kind
of
camper.
But you're looking at two axles on most of them, three at the best.
And the weight involved.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what I'm saying is all the damage to the road is not done by 18-wheelers. A great deal of it's done by 4-wheelers.
Pickup with four cords of wood in the back of it is
it's
the weight limit per square inch.
Right.
From our advice to Commissioner Annapolis, Commissioner, we're abiding by the law as it's written and as it's been in effect, and we've spent millions and billions of dollars trying to get, our equipment in line to do the best possible work under those laws. Now, if your roads are out of order, don't crack down on the industry.
Why penalize
the industry?
The roads.
Because Commissioner Knapp has an interest other than our industry. That's why.
Well, that may not for me. It may not be a fair statement.
Chairman.
Yes.
Definitely. It become evident to me today, this is the first one of these meetings that I've attended, that the people on this committee don't necessarily understand the whole thing. And I don't necessarily understand the legislative end of it. But my question right now is, it's become obvious that they ignored the people that testified. Yeah, we have a doubles permit on the Kenai Peninsula. It was basically the same set of facts. The people that do it, the drivers, the industry, was against it. And yet it was done. It was shoved on us, and there was nothing we could do about it. This is basically the same as this. Well, you can testify, but we're going to do what we want anyway. My question is, something like that, what does it come up for review with the Department of Transportation or this Transportation Committee? I, as a driver that don't feel safe operating on that highway, and have made my feelings known to the company, to the state troopers, to the Department of Transportation, and they all tell me, tough, we can't do anything about it. Where is that rectified?
Well, I can't really answer that except for the fact that the thing that can be done legislatively is that sometimes the legislature can pass a law that might prohibit that particular situation. Now, on the doubles on the Kenai, I have to confess to complete ignorance on it.
Well, it's the doubles, for example, were first the long doubles.
Yeah.
First tried on the Parks Highway, and it's a completely different highway than the
right.
Than the Glen.
They're the federal specs.
Yes.
Places.
Anyway, when they made a trial, I guess it was the Department of Transportation or the Highway Department made a trial run down there. They followed the truck with a camera, and see what they would have to do to rebuild the highway to bring it up to specs to be able to do it safely. And then they came out and told us, well, that's all it is to see what we have to do to redesign the highway. And then they all said, well, we're all against it. The road's not up to it. Next thing we know, we have the permit. this year it was supposed to be pulled the 1st of November, and it was renewed.
I didn't know about that.
I guess the objections, everybody in the industry that has to do the actual driving of it.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all as far as the Kenai is concerned.
Well, it was supposed to be from May to the 1st of November.
Yeah.
A seasonal permit.
Well, I knew. It was my understanding that that permit would be pulled, and it would just be the one on the Richardson that would be allowed.
Everybody thought that too, right up till the 1st of November. The 3rd of November, here goes a truck down the road. Long Devil's permit. So it was renewed.
Right.
My next question is, and I'm sure you're well aware of it, there's absolutely nothing done to enforce any safety regulations because there is no safety regulation.
Yeah. You're so absolutely right.
We can say whatever we want about these axles. A truck will go down here with 100,000 pounds on two axles and sit there and wait for the scale house to close. They know when it's open and closed.
Right.
And as soon as it closes, they go by. We have these nice, big, fancy scale houses. We don't even have the manpower or the money to operate them.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and you're talking there a little bit on HB 133, which we just passed this last year and was not funded, and what we're going to have to do as legislators is work like hell for that funding form for the Department of Safety so that they can.
What I get as a driver when I go in the scales, I say, hey, what about Joe Blow down here with an unsafe truck or an unsafe load, unsafe whatever? They say, hey, there's nothing we can do about it. That's the scale house. You talk to the state trooper, and they say, hell, we don't want it unless we can have it all, and, you know, and it's a big fight. Something's got to be done,
and I can agree with you, concur with you totally, and that's going to be one of our purposes this coming year.
Representative Cato, no. May I ask a question?
Representative Cato.
Now, are they using the doubles between Valdez Fairbanks,
right.
Correct?
Right.
They're also using them on the parks.
Right.
Right. Okay. Now, I'm getting a lot of pressure, a lot of static from the motorists in the area that drive the vehicles complaining about the trucks, the doubles coming through. And I was over on the Parks Highway the other day, and I met two of them down by Hurricane Gulch through that area. And, you know, a little skip of snow around. I didn't know where to put a horseback after they went by. I didn't know whether I was going in the ditch or...
Well, non-shouldered road, we're doing that on down there going absolutely zero shoulders that much.
Richardson Highway is a very good example of no shoulders. Yeah. There's none from Lappies to Delta.
Can I give you an example? On our Kenai Highway, the Sterling Highway permit, we as drivers argued with the company. You know, we said it's unsafe, we don't want to do it. Well, our boss finally went for a ride to Kenai and a set of Long Devils in the wintertime. He flew back. He wouldn't even ride back in the truck. The next day he had a letter out saying that until the highway is upgraded to make it safe to do it year-round, we wouldn't do it year-round anymore. Well, due to competition, that letter went by the wayside.
Yeah.
Well, that man, now just a minute now, that man is the same man that pushed that permit through, asked for it. But when he finally experienced it himself, he didn't want nothing more to do with it.
Yeah. Any comment though? The person that was commenting from Valdez said if they take the doubles away from them, then they are going to be unable to compete.
Correctly. And unable to compete. Not unable to compete with trucks.
Right. Railroads.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. I understand that. But at the same time, if you don't have the doubles, okay, and they don't, it's going to take at least 4 or 5 years before you're going to be able to put shoulders on the roads in the state that need shoulders.
When you're looking at a matter of safety, and which is important.
No, it's not that expensive.
Yeah, I'd like to direct our conversation back a little bit more. I would like to apprise everybody that on the double situation out of Valdez, believe me, I have an interest, not a vested interest, I don't own any trucks or anything. However, their safety record has been 100%.
Well, that's the same thing that Joe Swanson, the Division of Weights and Measures, or whatever he is, I can't remember now, but when I called him and I said, what is this garbage that you're going to allow this permit down there? He says, we've been pulling them on the Parks Highway for 3 years. And I says, no, you're wrong. You haven't been pulling them. I said, I have. The Parks Highway, I have no objection to them. Absolutely none. I do on the Sterling Highway.
Yeah, I think all these things are going to have to be taken into consideration as to the condition of the road, the safety record, various things like that.
Right.
Do you know
but how do we go about changing the thing now that they've rammed it down?
What's, Madam Chairman?
People,
yes. Representative Davis.
What is the status on the? I mean, how many trucks are
how many devils are on the Kenai? Is it now still a permit, or is it established?
It's getting to be an awful lot of them because of competition. Through attrition, everybody's being forced to haul too low a crew price, and one are just a little over the price. For the price of one 5 years ago, now the rate's gone far down, and we're really struggling.
People, all the trucking lines have to pull up to compete, and it doesn't do any good, but they're doing it anyway. It's a fact. Now, it's a limited permit. You can't do it when the weather's bad. That doesn't mean anything. You're down here past the scale house at Potter, it's warm or it's raining or whatever there. Well, it says due to limited visibility, you can't pull them. Well, you go around the corner 5 miles down the road, and it's snowing so hard you can't see. But here's a set of doubles out there on permit. It says they can't do it.
Stamped in red, right on the dealer. And